Good afternoon and welcome to Susan Harmon Experience, she, formerly known as the Susan Harmon Hour. Well, I am very, very excited and happy today to have a very special guest. A lot of you know I am very involved with Indian country and so much of what goes on there and how the interactions with what goes on in Indian country, what goes on in Latmanstown, whatever else. But I don't know who we are. I don't know. I just know I'm a human being, and it would be really, really nice, wouldn't it, if we were all treated each other with human beings while we continue to learn about one another. So today, the person that is here with me, I just met not very long ago. I did not know him, do not know him well, but he really made an impression on me. Ben Alex Dupree, a filmmaker, native filmmaker, who is very impressive in my opinion. I loved his film. I had gone to Seattle International Film Festival because of my friend Heather Ray, producing a film called Paulette. And so there was a Sunday afternoon at the Seattle International Film Festival where they did a thing called Doing the Work, and it was all indigenous filmmakers, little short films, and it was really great. So, Ben, welcome to Susan Harmon Experience.
Great. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
Well, you know, we talked, it was weird. I really felt connected with you. We talked briefly outside the theater, you know, when they're trying to get us to clear the sidewalk and take pictures all at the same time.
But it was quite a show out there. You know, there was plenty of people.
It was pretty amazing, huh?
Yeah. So thank you so much. And so Sweetheart Dancers is a film that I directed and produced for Concordia Studios with my own startup, Laughing Jackalope Films, which is a company that we started originally to promote modern traditional storytelling and alternative ways of looking at indigenous people. And, you know, we saw that there was a real lack of representation in contemporary Native filmmaking, and we wanted to provide an outlet for that. And so Sweetheart Dancers is a story of Sean and Adrian, a two-spirit, or what we would call a gay couple, who competition dance at powwows around the country. It's become quite a modern form of dancing where, you know, the money, the prize money can be up to $5,000 or $10,000 if you win.
And yeah, there's some big prize money out there.
Yeah, it's turning into almost like a rodeo circuit or, you know, something where you can make your living off of being a dancer. And that's the allure, I believe. And Sean and Adrian have put in their time individually in their categories, and they've danced as individuals, but there had never been a two-spirit LGBTQIA plus couple who competed together for prize money in categories that had been dominated by traditionally straight couples. So when they entered their first contest in this way, they were disqualified. It came out later on that they were disqualified. And the statements ranged from, we're not really sure how to, you know, blend the modern world with our traditional ways, to, you know, well, that's just not what this contest is about. And, you know, a lot of really gray areas that have to do with discrimination in Indian country. And so we thought this was a good opportunity to tell a story about the resiliency of young two-spirit couples. And what they decided to do next was they waited and they doubled down and they prepared to go back into the competition arena. And by that time, there had been a little bit of adjustment going on, and the committees allowed them to compete, and they gave them third place in the end. So it was a bit of a success story that we hadn't anticipated, but we did know that the story was relevant to us because from a lot of purposes, you know, a coming out story in Indian country in modern times, which has never been told before.
I will tell you, I cried. And I cried again when I told my daughter about the movie. My daughter's husband is Chippewa from Turtle Mountain in North Dakota. And, you know, last year with Standing Rock, it brought up so much stuff for him. I mean, he was in boarding school, sexually abused, you know what I mean? And it's so ashamed to ever say publicly that this is what had happened to him, you know. So I understand it in general because, by golly, I fought for them rights for everybody, you know. Because my thing, I'm sitting there in the theater, and I'm like, why can't people just be who they are? Why does this bother somebody else? Where's the love, you know? Yeah. And I saw these two beautiful young men, you know? And just like, obviously, when you watch them dance, for those of you in the audience who have never gone to a powwow, please go. Because when you see the energy that comes through with the dances, and you see how these two dance together in your movie, it's just so beautiful. You know, if it doesn't touch your spirit, then you're not paying attention.
Thank you. You know, we did, when we originally started to organize the film, I said, you know what I really would appreciate in this film is I would hope that we can make powwow dancing look epic, make it look beautiful, and really show some of the storytelling that's involved with our traditional dancing and just what it takes to be a competitor at that level and to be an artist sharing your heart and soul. And so in the film, we go in and show them dancing in their street clothes and their workout clothes.
Yes, fantastic in the backyard. Yeah.
Yeah. And we wanted people to understand that it's a skill that you develop over years of training and that there's showmanship to it, and that it really reflects, you know, the indigeneity of our spirit. So that's why we did it that way.
Well, you know, I don't think people realize that the prize money doesn't always cover the cost of the regalia. I mean, you know, this is a lot goes into that, and it's not just looking pretty. There's ceremony, there's ritual, there's, do you know what I mean? There's a lot involved.
Yeah, every piece of a dance regalia has meaning to the dancer and to the family. And, you know, prior to colonization, indigenous people used markers and family symbology, and we identified ourselves, and that was part of our heritage and culture, that, you know, when you wear, you know, your outfit from the Gap, you don't wear your markers as much. Now it's being brought back in form of tattoos or hairstyles or a lot of other traditional ways to mark yourself and your family. But, you know, that was also very taboo up until the time that we started accepting tattoos, you know. So we've been living in a very, very short time from the time that colonization happened to today, you know, that we've gone through radical changes. I guess it's a spike in all changes across the globe. And so this is a little bit of a return to a sense of identity and who we were when we were allowed to be ourselves.
You know, my husband and I and our kids lived in Oklahoma for a period of time. And honestly, we couldn't get along with the white people there at all. It was just really weird. And we're white people, you know, and we're weird white people. But, you know, my friend Henry Poxicut, they're Comanche, and he said, you know, you're really good people for white people. And I said, no, Henry, we're just good people, right? So we've actually been incorporated into their family. My daughter is in her 40s, and they were 4 years old when they became friends, and they're still friends. And last year I went to the Comanche Nation Fair and did my show, broadcasted there from Oklahoma. It was just an amazing show because we had the tribal historian and the elder of the elder tribe, you know, and the chair of the Comanche Nation introduce my guests, which was, you know, it's a pretty big deal when you get the chair doing that. I don't think a lot of people realize, you know, how humble that made me. How, you know, I mean, it's like, wow, this is really, really beautiful that he's doing this. Mm. But, you know, I look at their family, just their family, and I see how the grandmother, who's passed now, but how she spoke nothing but Comanche and sassy. You know, her granddaughter knows practically no Comanche at all. Just in a few generations. And then I see, you know, this one gentleman was the elder there, that he was teaching the kids how to make a bow and arrow and what it took and what wood you use and how you season things and, you know, the sinew and, you know, all of this. And he says the problem with the young people is they don't have the patience it takes to do this. You know, of course, as you get older, you gripe about kids being impatient anyway. But the point is, you know, these are dying arts that are being renewed by some people. And that is so powerful.
Yeah, that's definitely. And what it is I think that the interest has always been there, but there hasn't been a great storytelling thread that's allowed young Indigenous people to put context to what it means to be Native all the time. Yes. I mean, the languages, the arts, making bow and arrows, these are also, they're extensions of the way that we view the world, which is from a holistic worldview, is reasonably anti-capitalistic. we're talking about wanting to preserve our natural resources and not desecrate them. And it's there's a foundational, like, we were talking about this the other day with my friend and I, and I said, there's a Indigenous mythology that exists out here that that encompasses all that we feel and we value. And it's not about being from the past or the future. It's a very momentary thing that, has to do with our heart, our beliefs, and the way that we treat the world, whether it be animals or, our water, our sacred water. There's so many things that we believe, I think, and it's globally.
Water is life.
It's global, right? It's globally Indigenous. Mm-hmm. And so,
ancestors did the same thing. See, this is this is one of the things that I just feel it's important for us to come together with our individual gifts, and do that. And because there's a very big difference in just even the words you use, natural resources. That is an alien terminology, because the land isn't a resource. The land is our mother, and those are very different perspectives. So we try to use language that is alien to belief. Does that make sense?
It does. And a lot of the context got lost with the Indigenous languages and how we are able to fluidly speak about the way that we walk on the earth. And that's why, more importantly than just, I know that saving languages are also necessary for asserting Indigenous sovereignty in our own communities, but it's also beautiful to have a sense of perspective about the natural world that doesn't come from a colonizing mindset. And so even when we speak, like for myself, I speak pretty good English, but I think I lose a lot of context in what I'm wanting to say about the earth and how I feel about the earth. And I think dance brings a little bit of those elements back, or our artwork, or the way that we treat each other. There's nonverbal ways of contextualizing an Indigenous lifestyle. But we do lose a lot by trying to translate the earth's needs and values, based on English language. It's difficult.
It is, and concepts. I mean, the idea, there's a rapist, a rapist mentality of there's this thing and I want it and I'm going to take it and I'm going to use it.
Yeah.
And you look at the land that way and you look at human beings that way. And it's a very different way of saying, I understand this. I'm one with this. I am an aspect of. I am part of this. I want to merge with this. I want to feel good with this. Those are very different ways of interacting with the world. And one of my things I've always said, when people say, we've got to save the planet. No, we have to save our relationship with the planet.
Yeah.
Because she can get rid of us. You don't seem to understand how this works.
Well, it, and I, you know, I'm, I'm a big advocate of the idea that, you know, we need to save the planet. And that's not just rooted in my indigenous sensibilities, but also scientific fact. Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, we are on the cusp of a sixth mass extinction. We are exactly. in a very hot zone. And scientifically, it's being proven that we are above and beyond our capacity to exist on the planet. And I fear for our children, and I feel for the, you know, when we say the future generations, I literally mean my own children. Yes. that's how close we've gotten. And so I do, you know, have a really staunch, you know, belief that, you know, indigenous sensibility isn't rooted in my tribes necessarily. It's rooted in the way that we treat the earth naturally. And, you know, so that's, it's universal for sure.
It truly is. And I know that we've kind of gotten a little bit away from the film, but that's okay because it's still part of the whole thing. Do you know what I mean? And I wanted to go more into, you know, this two-spirit identity because, you know, people don't even know what that word two-spirit means. And I think it's important. I know that I don't know which nations on this continent, but I know a number of them identified 5 to 7 sexes instead of this polarized male and female, which is just a real polarized view of looking at it. What my belief is, and I'm writing a book on this, is that humanity is a spectrum of sexuality.
Yes. Yes. And again, that goes back to the language and finding ways to identify, you know, how we work with the world, like how to, and that's in a lot of our languages, it's the same. It's like, you know, how do we walk with the world? It's not a you or an I, and it's not, it's always encompassing. It's them, it's theys. And so we see that now with the terminology, with going back to ambiguous pronouns. In those kind of things, mm-hmm. Two spirit, you know, and I identify as a straight man, you know, just, you know, I have a family, and, but I, you know, I understand quite a bit about how our language interprets, different members of our culture and our society, and two spirit identities is a vague terminology that encompasses all of our spectrums. And from a traditional way, there's certain ceremonies and certain ways of being that two-spirit identity, people who identify as two-spirits are a part of that community. It's mm-hmm. it's a world and it transcends a lot of other worlds. And so yes, there can be multiple you know, beings within a being, and that's kind of a loose way to look at it, without, you know, giving away too much. But I do think that it brings, I think we're coming to a great moment in American history, at least, where we're starting to acknowledge those spectrums and the way that works. Whereas, you know, we go back to boarding school, you know, the Catholic boarding school did come in and do a pretty good number on shaming identities mm-hmm. across the United States. And they worked very hard to make sure that all people of all nations would feel guilty about themselves if they didn't mm-hmm. live a certain way. And so two-spirit is a door. It's opening, and it's becoming very prevalent in our communities to bring back a little bit of self-esteem and strength, and you know, allow that part of our culture to shine again. Whereas two-spirit identities were once chiefs and medicine men, and were holistic and were very revered to us and mystified us in some ways in a beautiful way, not in a hokey, cheesy way, but like, you know, these were powerful people who we really, really honored in our cultures. And to see, you know, and back to the film, you know, to see Sean and Adrian stepping forward in their leadership role to present themselves as competition dancers, as a two-spirit couple, was very empowering, because it also opens the door for anyone else who feels that that's their role.
I know, and the beauty of it, when you're brought to tears, not out of sadness, but out of intensity of emotion.
Yeah.
It means that you succeeded in your film, in my opinion.
Thank you. Thank you, you know, so much.
Because, well,
Go
ahead.
Well, we need wins, right? I mean, we live in a day and age where, you know, I have young people looking up to me and asking me, you know, how are we going to succeed in the future? You know, and I said, you know, we need wins. We need emotional wins. We need some resiliency. We need strength. And it's also my role at, you know, becoming a middle-aged man to step forward and put aside all of my childish inklings, you know, and really focus on knowing that, you know, in 10, 15, 20 years, I will be the elder. And so I've had to shed my skin as well. And I had to face my own toxic masculinity. I've had to put aside my, you know, all of my ways and just really focus on how I can be a better person to allow this transition to happen for us, because we need leadership at this time more than ever. And I think that's kind of the magic of what Sean and Adrian brought to Sweetheart Dancers as a film, is they stepped forward and said, we're not going to wait for someone else to be our savior here. We're going to do this for ourselves. Mm-hmm. And that's a great example for young people to follow.
Yeah, if you want to be the change you want to see, you know what I mean?
Yes.
If you wait for somebody else, you're waiting, and then you've got to turn around and come back and do it all over again, because you just do it. I mean, it really is the truth. If you see something, say something. If I remember sitting in a nail shop some years back, and they were talking at that point about recognizing gay marriage. You know, this was like the big hot topic. You know, it was on television. I'm in the nail shop. There's a beautiful young black woman getting her nails done. She goes, "Well, I just don't understand that. I just don't understand it." And I said, "Well, honey, I want you to think about this. It was just a few years back, a couple of decades back, that it was illegal for you to marry a white man."
Right. Yeah.
And she looked at me and she said, "Well, that's not right." I said, "Exactly." You're exactly right. It's not right. And yeah, it's not right for us to say that these people don't have the same rights as us. They're not special rights. They're just the same. And she said, "I never thought of it like that." Now, I think she was able to hear what I had to say, because I didn't scream and holler at her. I didn't tell her she was stupid. She wasn't stupid. Ignorant, because she didn't know. There's nothing wrong with being ignorant. I'm ignorant of a lot of stuff, you know, like, "Oh, well, teach me. You know, I want to learn about that." But if you come at me screaming and hollering, I've shut you off immediately.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that that's one lesson that we could all do with. If you come to me and you speak with me, not at me, I will hear you.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of, I guess, you know, I recently I've been sharing the idea that I think we've been in a really well-calculated myth in the American consciousness. I feel like, you know, they curated what America was or is, you know, sometime after, you know, I think the biggest job was after World War II, and, you know, they were, you know, building suburbs and, you know, bringing this idea that if you get educated and you get, and you'll get a good job and you'll have a house and you'll raise your kids. And so there was a big, the other big myth was that, you know, technology was going to save the world, and that we were going to eat food in a pill, and that, you know, don't do your dishes anymore. We'll take care of this. Automation is the future. I do think that there is a reality in some of those ideas, but there, a lot of those ideas were lost in translation, and we're stuck in this strange kind of decrepit carnival ride where some rides work and some rides are broken, and we're not really quite sure if we should try to get in that pool
or another one.
Yeah, I think that this illusion of the American myth is interesting to me, and that's our you know, as a filmmaker, I love that approach, is how are we going to retell the American dream? What does it really truly mean to be an American, and what kind of future can we look forward to? And those are the explorations that I take with my work. And it starts with some resiliency and some, a nod to, you know, kind of this, this liberal, you know, human loving perspective, which might not be very popular, but,
I'm not sure it isn't popular, and I do want to talk more about that. We are going to take a short break. and come back and talk more about all of this with Ben Alex Dupree. This is a fascinating topic. His film is an amazing, it's a short film, but this is really a good film. And, you know, if you check on his website, which we will give you when we come back from break, you know, so that you can find out where he's going to be, where his film's going to be showing, and maybe it's somewhere near where you are. But until then, hold on, stay tuned. We are not going anywhere. You're listening to Susan Harmon Experience, 1150 AM, KKNW, Alternative Talk Radio.
I'm Gary Mance.
I'm Suzanne Mitchell.
We're a couple of baby boomers who bring you a talk radio mix of metaphysics and music, politics, and pop culture.
And you never know which celebrity will join us for an interesting conversation.
Mance and Mitchell is Boomer HQ, Friday and Saturday mornings at 10 on 1150 AM KKNW.
Your home for alternative talk in Seattle and Western Washington.
Susan Harmon is offering her skills as an intuitive counselor, medium, and energy healer via phone or Skype with her audience at a reduced rate of $40 for the first half hour. Susan listens to your guidance and gives what is needed for you in the present moment. Email Susan at SusanHarmon.com and put "I love the Susan Harmon Hour" in the subject line. This is a limited time offer, so set up your appointment by emailing Susan at SusanHarmon.com today.
In March 2016, Melinda Rabein received the Right Now Today Humanitarian Award for her work on a film about domestic violence called Asylum, which was also awarded Best Narrative Short at the 2018 Cinema on the Bayou Film Festival. Now she's turned her talents to making a new documentary, Stories of Us, Camp Second Chance. In the process, she embedded herself in the camp during the snows of winter, spending Christmas there, and returning for numerous visits since. Rabein shows the beauty and humanity of the homeless residents and builds a bridge of compassion in this compelling look at the common threads that bind us all. Interested in knowing more? Contact Melinda Rabein. Email melindarabein at gmail.com.
No other station delivers this much variety. Alternative Talk 1150.
Good afternoon and welcome back to Susan Harmon Experience, she, formerly known as the Susan Harmon Hour. I am here today with an amazing filmmaker, native filmmaker, Ben Alex Dupree. He did the film Sweetheart Dancers. It's a short film. It's wonderful. He was also a producer on another film. When I went to the Seattle International Film Festival and saw this doing the work in the afternoon, it was all indigenous filmmakers. It was really great. Tracy Rector, just a little nod to Tracy. She does indigenous showcase, and she's just done a marvelous job. I've done a number of films that she's had, you know, there. She really works hard and does a good job. But I had originally gone because I wanted to see Heather Ray, because I knew her through her work with Misty Upham. And she directed a film called Paulette. And I understand, Ben, that you were also a producer on the film Paulette.
Yes, yes. So Heather and I both were producing short films out of Concordia Studios, which is Davis Guggenheim's company and a fellowship in L.A., Davis Guggenheim is known for winning the Academy Award for The Inconvenient Truth and Waiting for Superman and a rock and roll doc called It Might Get Loud, which is on Netflix with The Edge. And yes, so we were working on each other's projects, and Heather was a consulting producer on Sweethearts, and I worked as a producer on her project called Paulette, about Paulette Jordan's run for governor of Idaho, and she would have been the first Native American governor in United States history, and you know, did a remarkable job in that race, and we followed her closely for the past year. And so, you know, Paulette was directed by Heather Ray, and I spent some time with them on the road and shooting and just being a part of that team and being really inspired by indigenous leadership that was encompassing that, you know, that race. And also with Tracy Rector, you know, and her program, her Fourth World Lab, and her work with Seattle International Film Fest is a really remarkable, you know, I'm very blessed to be surrounded by strong indigenous women who are working at the highest levels in the entertainment business to, you know, to bring our narratives forward in this way. So it's been fun.
Yeah, and these are powerful, powerful, open, transparent people who look for ways to work with other people. I don't feel a competitive spirit with any of these women in my interactions with them, which to me is beautiful. They're just looking for ways to make it happen.
Yes.
And that's important. The film Paulette really impressed me too, but Paulette, oh my God, she impressed me. I sure hope she runs again because she narrowly lost in a state that that a lot of people supported her that had never supported a Democrat. But she's so transparent, so open, so real that if you don't get the authenticity of this human being, you know, that's what we need. That's what we need in leadership in this country right now is authenticity.
I definitely agree. And I love that Paulette's, you know, a strong mother, and she looks at the earth as a mother would, you know, and she,
yes,
she advocates for, you know, saving the orca and restoring salmon runs and protecting natural resources. I say resources.
I know, I'm terrible.
Land.
I put that in your hand, didn't I?
Yeah, now I got stuck on that. But I mean, she loves tribal lands, and she loves,
right,
you know, the energy of taking care of the earth. And I think that's a beautiful way to look at the world as a political leader.
Absolutely. I mean, it just, she really impressed me. And because I can see how she can work with people with differing views from hers. And that to me is super important. I don't know if you ever heard of a woman named Barbara Jordan. She was in politics out of Texas. And she was in the Texas State House. She was, someone said to her one time years ago in when she was in Congress, well, you're not very patient with people, are you? And she said, I'm not very patient with stupid people. But she would sit down and drink whiskey with these old guys that, you know, in the House of Republicans. She's a black woman, you know, and she just knew how to talk with people, not at people.
Right.
And I think that no matter what your skin is, I don't care if you're called an apple by somebody else. For those of you who don't know what an apple is to a banana that is to an Oreo, right? White on the inside and red or yellow or black on the outside.
You know, I always like to say that if you call me an apple, I must be the half-eaten apple because my skin's oxidized and I'm really browner on the inside than I am red.
Hey, we're all oxidizing as we speak, right?
You have a sense of humor. I mean, it all...
Yeah, exactly.
And I think it's well known that there's a myth in this world, but specifically American myth, that, you know, that there's a dominant culture that wants to maintain that integrity. And so they pit indigenous people versus black people or black people and Asians.
Right.
And there's a
right.
huge, but really we're the 99%, right? So there's really not a lot of resources we're fighting over. So it's all a scheme in a way, you know.
And well, you know, it's interesting because I've really looked at a lot of this on how we, you know, who are we? And you see where people, and you see it in Indian country. Oh, well, you're a white person. I mean, I had someone tell me I couldn't use a feather because I was white. I'm like, are you crazy? You know, I'm going to do what I want to do because I'm a human being. And if that's a problem for you, that's your problem, not mine.
That's
not disrespectful.
I rarely use feathers because I feel like the birds need them more than I do.
Well, I don't take them from them. I don't take the feathers from them. When they're laying on the ground, they don't need them anymore.
If I really cared, then I would try to glue them back in a bird.
The bird shed them. They don't need them.
I'm just joking.
That's so funny. Oh my God. Yeah. I loved your humor. It's great.
Yeah, humor takes you a long ways. You know, we've gone through a lot and as people, and you know, I feel for people, for human beings in general, because I feel like we're still going through a lot and we're struggling to find our way, and humor is the way that it breaks it all open. It allows us to be comfortable with each other, and it's great. It's great to have a sense of humor. It's Indian humor, you know?
It is. I mean, and I can't say this on the air, but I was having a discussion with someone about, how we interact with each other sexually and all and so forth. And we ended up with one final sentence at 4 o'clock in the morning. We broke it all down to one thing. Just don't do this, right? You know? You know, there has to be what happens between consenting adults, and frankly, the Catholic Church, among others, has a lot to answer for. How does shame ever serve any of us? It does not. It serves no one.
Well, I mean, it was used as originally, you know, Catholic shame or guilt. Historically, in the United States, religion was used as a weapon in the United States against indigenous people and other minorities. And it was used in along with the U.S. government's, you know, desire to, you know, colonize the land and take the resources. And it was used to justify killing millions and millions of people. And
probably about 70 million with the European invasion.
We've also seen scientifically spikes in the atmosphere when the buffalo were, you know, nearly extinct and killing off keystone species like our wolves and all of our animals and our plant life with industrialization has actually been proven within, you know, some of the carbon testing to be very detrimental to us and has led humanity to the place that we are now on with this, you know, over 400 parts per million in the atmosphere. So, it's by definition industrialized, you know, the industrialized world from about 1850 on has been the biggest dramatic spike since, you know, the last extinction era. So, I mean, we're really talking about not just indigenous mythology, but we're talking about human beings are on a crash course for extinction.
I mean, the island people recognize this already in the amount of land that they're using. Losing, not using. Just losing a huge amount. One inch in the ocean is a lot of water. It's a lot of water. And, you know, you turn around and you look at things and we keep acting like, well, there's still time. There is and there isn't. I mean, when you have ice melting that has not in where they can go back and measure time, and it's not melted prior to now, you're right. We are on this verge of the sixth extinction. But one of the things that crossed my mind as you were saying some of this, that as this industrial thing has increased, so has the power of women simultaneously done. It's almost like we have one option. We are also being offered another option simultaneously And we have to decide where do we put our energies. Does that make any sense?
Absolutely. I truly believe that there is an energy in the universe that has a plan for us if we choose to do so.
And, exactly.
And we have to tune ourselves and heal ourselves, our bodies and our minds, and let all the negativity go and connect with, you know, the source of all of these, you know, positives and negatives, you know, which I call a creator, you know.
Exactly. When I do a healing with someone, my invocation is always blessings be unto the source of all life.
Right.
If you want to do in Jesus' name, that's your choice. I'm not discrediting anybody else's path.
Right.
You know, I'm simply saying you have to be logical and you have to actually look at reality and what it is and not operate from a place of fear. And I think that to me, that's the biggest problem is people are afraid of the wrong things.
Yeah, exactly. And as a filmmaker, that's what I strive to do is I have an element of spirituality in all the projects that I choose that have to do with if even if they're the person fails at their goal, you know, it follows a universal myth of respect and honor and, you know, reverence for the spiritual realm. So those are the elements of my storytelling that I really hope I can scale into larger projects, into bigger things, you know, as Sweethearts, you know, we're halfway through Sweethearts on the festival run, and we have several more showings. I don't know if you want me to go into that.
Yes. Can you kind of give people an idea of, you know, like for July and August of where you might be showing?
Sure. Well, you know, and just to say, first of all, if anyone wants to know where to find future screenings, I'm on Instagram and Facebook as Bendigenous, and it's Bendigenous. So like Indigenous, but with Ben. And I usually post all of the upcoming screenings. The ones that I can say publicly at this point is in July, we'll be at Outfest in Los Angeles, which is a really beautiful festival. That'll be in July 20th and 28th. We still have a screening this week at Palm Springs International Short Fest coming up on the 23rd. And then we'll be in Frameline, LGBTQ Fest in San Francisco this week. I'm flying.
Yeah, but this show isn't going to air. That's
okay.
What I'm
saying. Well, okay, well, right. Let's. Yeah, we can start here and say, well, yeah, there's a lot of great upcoming screenings that we are this week, you know, which might be too late to announce for your show, but we'll be at Frameline, San Francisco, Palm Springs International Short Fest. I'll be at AFI Docs this week. And but upcoming festivals would be the Outfest in Los Angeles. And
what were the dates on the Outfest?
That would be July 20th and 28th.
Oh, cool. I might actually be able to see the one on the 28th. Outfest, and because I'm only 5 hours from LA. Woohoo! I would love to see the film again because it's a great film. But where do people go? What's the website? Where do they need to go to get more information around you? I know you're on Instagram, but name that again one more time. Bendigenous. So-
Yeah, Bendigenous. That's how you can find me on social media. It's like Indigenous, but with a Ben, Bendigenous. And I've been updating that quite regularly with all the different festivals that we have. I was updating our website, laughingjackalopefilms.com, which is also an avenue, but I don't put any of the screening dates on there, so I don't think that would be. That's just if you want to check out the type of work that we're doing and who we are and what we're hoping to accomplish. So that's a different website. But Bendigenous online is the best way to know.
It really is, because we're changing, again, technology. We're changing so much in the way we communicate.
Yeah.
And how we do that. You know, it's like people are almost trying to force me to do Twitter. it's just like so stupid. But, you know, go ahead.
Oh, no, I agree. And also and one more thing is if everyone misses the festival run, and I will send you an email so you can announce to your listeners, but we will be going onto digital platforms in the fall, and they'll be widely available on a platform that you can stream the film probably in September or October. So it's coming
soon. Perfect. Yeah, perfect. That will work for a lot of people. I mean, now I love Instagram, and I fell in love with Instagram, you know, years ago, because it was like, wow, I don't have to know this person's language. I'm not going to get into a bunch of pictures of kittens unless I like that. I'm not going to, you know, hear people griping about their friends, you know, and whining about their lives and all of this. This is really great. I can tell something about this person by what pictures they post. It's beautiful, you know? It's this very visual perspective of the world.
Yes, it can be beautiful, and it also can be a disaster because some people's bedrooms are full of nonsense. So it depends on how you look at your social media accounts.
Well, you don't have to look at those people.
Yeah, unless they're your mother.
No. Oh, that's true.
No, my mom's not on social media.
Oh, she's not?
Oh, no.
You know, and this is just a little aside, but my daughter was having some kind of problem with doing something online and she couldn't do it. My granddaughter said to her, well, grandma can do it. So you can't use age as an excuse, people.
Absolutely not.
You can learn anytime.
Yeah. Where there's a will, right? You know.
Exactly. And, you know, so I know you have future projects, that you want to, want to do. I mean, I Seattle, I know this sounds crazy because I lived in Seattle for so long. It never, you live in a town, you're like, yes, the film festival's going on. I did not know until this year it was the largest film festival in the country. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's like,
you just take things for granted. But, I have friends that have films in the film festival that are just amazing filmmakers. And so many independent filmmakers can do so much. I mean, I look at the work, we briefly mentioned Heather Ray, producing Misty Upham's. One of the best movies I've ever seen was Frozen River. I mean, that movie was amazing. You look at the work that people do and how it touches, film touches people's lives. Film, you're not just storytelling. You're visually doing a thing that people get. There's nothing better to me than sitting in a dark theater and being surrounded by someone's life.
Right. Yeah, it's a very powerful medium, and it's shaped the world, and our number one export in this country has always been, well, at this point, is entertainment. We are the leaders in providing entertainment to the world, and by default, that means we are shaping the narrative for other countries. I believe Netflix reach is over 190 countries at this point. Wow. So we know that, our storytelling does reach the masses. And there, with that comes great responsibility to reshape the narrative in a way that allows us to continue this beautiful life that we have.
You're absolutely right. And I really would like to get to know you better. I mean, we just talked briefly out on the street, but I felt a connection there. And I feel like you're going to, if you don't mind me saying this publicly like this, but I just see for you, I mean, your guides are just yammering in my ear to tell you, you are really going to make some incredible films. You're just beginning, and what you're going to produce is going to impact on so many people's lives. You're going to make a major difference for people. And I hope that the people that are listening to this show realize the gift that they're being given by hearing what you have to say today, because 10 years from now, they're going to go, I remember hearing this guy 10 years ago, and he's amazing. Yeah.
Wow. I really appreciate that, and thank you for bringing that. If I stop to think about what it is that has to be done, then I might scare myself.
Yeah, that's why we don't do that one step at a time. Just put one foot in front of the other and keep going, and then after a while, you can look back and say, "Hey, I actually have come some distance," because you know, in the movie Wind River,
right?
You saw that movie? Yeah, God, I was bawling at the end of that movie. I was just sobbing, But when he says, let's see how far you can get because of her ability to run.
Yeah.
Let's see how far you can run.
Yeah.
And it was so powerful. It was so powerful. Another movie I recommend. And I had people that went on, well, why didn't they have more Native actors, or why didn't they do this? I remember Misty talking about in Jimmy P that Benicio del Toro played the part. Why'd they have this Puerto Rican guy do this? He spent all his time on her reservation learning how to speak like the older men spoke, mm-hmm. and the criticism. She said, because the film would never have gotten the attention that it got without Benicio.
Yeah.
And so understanding of developing allies, I think, is really important for people to get. We all need allies. Women didn't get the vote without men helping.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's a good question. We deal with that a lot in Hollywood at this point. We're talking about, what it takes to build the capacity to have, an all lead native show. And right. You know, it would, but there are so many moving parts and there's so many ways that that has to be figured out. And, you know, it, so we know that there are some home runs coming, that there's some great opportunities to, mm-hmm. to make impact on a larger scale. And it is going to take some development time, to work as teams. And in the meantime, you know, we want to see great native stories and, you know, that indigenous exactly. sensibility reflected in the work that's being put out. And so I know some really, you know, I can't talk about it, but there's some really great there's some great stuff coming out in the near future. That's really going to surprise. I think the public is going to really enjoy seeing different facets of indigenous culture through film and television. And we're just beginning. And I hope to be a part of that ride and be there for it.
You are a part of that yeah. ride. Yeah, no question about it. Are there any last words you'd like to leave our audience with before yeah. we say adieu?
Sure. I would like to say, well, first, thank you so much for having me. And I believe that there's always a spiritual thread with everything that we create, whether we're an attorney or working at a Starbucks or a filmmaker. We always have the ability to change and impact those who we come in contact with. And ultimately, for Native people, that's kind of the secret sauce of walking with the earth in a good way. And that's always, you know, taking care of your fellow man and being respectful and humble. And in that way, I would just like to say thank you for the opportunity. And to all the listeners, you know, if you find me on social media, Bendigenous, you know, say hello and I'll be happy to say hi back. And we'll just continue in the spirit of, you know, the people. And we are all the people.
I couldn't have said it better, and I didn't. You did. So, thank you. Thank you so much, Ben. I really appreciate it. I will be looking up Bendigenous this afternoon. And once again, folks, this was a very appropriate film for us to be talking about, because I always end this show with I Hope You Dance. And whether it's a powwow dance or just dancing through your day, it doesn't hurt you one bit. Just instead of walking into that store, dance into that store. But whatever you do, keep on dancing.